University Broadcast Studio. It's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American.
Everybody, welcome to Hour 3 of the Todd Starnes Radio Program. Terrific to have you drop by for the conversation, folks. Go ahead and write down our telephone number. You're going to need this if you want to weigh in on the conversation, 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. Our website, which is really a terrific resource for all of you guys, some great free stuff for you there, our newsletter, our daily podcast, commercial-free podcast, all free of charge and available at toddstarnes.com. Well, one of the stories we've been covering for a very long time here out of the state of Connecticut, where female high school athletes have really been frustrated over school districts allowing boys who identify as girls to compete on athletic teams, especially track and field teams. And now that frustration has led to a federal lawsuit that was filed. On the newsmaker line, our good friend Kristen Wagner from Alliance Defending Freedom, an incredible Christian legal organization that's representing the girls in this lawsuit. Kristen, good to chat with you. It's been a while.
It has. It's great to be here, Todd.
Well, I want you to tell our listeners what's going on there in Connecticut and who you guys are representing.
We represent three female track stars in Connecticut. They're in the Connecticut Athletic League and have just worked so hard their whole lives to shave just seconds off of their different times so that they can achieve success and future scholarships and other opportunities. What happened in their particular conference is 3 weeks prior to the entry of some new runners, those two runners were running as biological males in the men's division or the boys' division. 3 weeks later, one of them switched over to the girls' division and is now running in the girls' division. And since then, those two biological males now hold 15 different women's state championship titles that were once held by 9 different girls in the league. So we filed a lawsuit challenging the conference's action and the school district's action because it's creating an unfair playing field for our girls.
And it seems, according to the Associated Press, the Interscholastic Athletic Conference says that its policy follows the state anti-discrimination law, and they say students must be treated in school by the gender with which they identify. Your reaction to that?
Well, it's simply not accurate. And Title IX, which is a federal law, states that there cannot be discrimination on the basis of sex, including in athletics. And when you look at whether there's discrimination, the different conferences and schools are supposed to be taking into account the girls' athletic abilities, their skill sets, and providing equal opportunities. We need to remember, if you, say, apply this in track, it applies to all different sports, but here we're dealing with track. It only takes three biological males, athletes, to bump the best girls off of the podium, only three. And that's exactly what's happening in Connecticut. The biological differences that exist that are just based in objective reality between men and women, they are reflected in Title IX, rightly so. And when we don't honor those that reality, it's the girls that get hurt the most, just as they are here.
Kristen, I'm curious if this is just isolated to Connecticut. Are you guys hearing about other issues nationwide?
Oh, we absolutely are. We're getting calls from parents of other girls who are wanting. We're getting calls from legislators who are asking us, you know, we're seeing this happen in our own states and localities. What can we do? You know, Todd, just this morning, my daughter testified before a committee in Arizona because of the things she's experienced in athletics. So this is getting to be more and more prevalent, and it's creating an unlevel playing field for girls. It's unfair, and it's destroying their athletic opportunities.
You just argued a case before the Supreme Court. Where do you see this going? Because this is a big issue. I know the ACLU is involved. Is this one of those issues that could very well end up at the Supreme Court?
I think it could, but it shouldn't. The law is clear.
Right.
We know what sex means, and we know that from even other case law, that girls, we fought hard as women to ensure that we have equality and that that's reflected in the law. And nearly 50 years of advances for women have taken place. And a lot of that hasn't been through athletics and other areas. So it shouldn't go before the Supreme Court. The law is clear, and we're hopeful that it won't. But if it does, I'm optimistic about how the court will rule.
You know, I feel not only for these girls, the biological girls, but these transgender students. I mean, you know, they're going through whatever they're going through, and it's a tough issue. But the reality is, it does come down to sex and gender, and those are pretty well defined. But we're living in a society where it seems as though they're wanting to deconstruct gender. You know, the idea of gender fluidity, that, you know, you can be a guy, you can be a girl. I mean, where does all of this stop, and what is the end result here? What is the end game?
Well, Todd, I think you're absolutely right to bring up, you know, we need to have compassion for all individuals, especially those who are facing gender confusion. And certainly our clients do. I mean, the last thing they've wanted to do is to say something that would be hurt someone's feelings, or, you know, they're very cautious about that. At the same time, though, there is this bigger issue that you're talking about, the deconstruction of gender and the refusal to recognize biological differences. We know that athletics, which has been hard fought for girls to get opportunities in, it took a federal law to do it, that allowing girls to participate and have equal opportunities helps them in all kinds of other areas as well, whether it's decreasing rates of suicide, whether it's, you know, empowerment in athletics, as well as academics. And there's just a host of good things that come from it. And we don't want to deny the girls the opportunities either. And lastly, I'll just bring this. This was what really brought it home for me. There are lots of facts out there, but the best women's Olympic athletes right now would literally lose to thousands of boys and men who are not professional athletes by very nature of their scores. This is provable. So these biological differences in athletics, this is an area where we need the law to recognize that reality.
Well, it's a fascinating court case, and I really do appreciate you guys, because I know Alliance Defending Freedom, you guys are about compassion, and these brave young ladies who are standing up, and you guys are just doing some great work here, and we'll be following this case, so keep us updated if there are any developments.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Kristen Wagner, ladies and gentlemen, from Alliance Defending Freedom. And this one is, it's an unbelievable court case. The idea that biological girls have to file a federal lawsuit over this issue. I am curious, ladies and gentlemen, where you fall on this issue. Because, again, as Krista Wagner said, this is not just isolated to Connecticut. At least 17 states allow transgender athletes to compete without restrictions. In other words, if you're a boy, you identify as a girl, well, you get to play on the girls' sports teams, even if that means bumping a biological girl from the team. But where do you think the end result here is? I mean, they're deconstructing gender before our very eyes. 844-747-8868. It's a toll-free number here, folks. 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stern Show.
America's only fair and balanced talk radio host, Todd Starnes.
Oh dear, Charlemagne the God is back in the headlines. Charlemagne the God. Caleb, are you familiar with Charlemagne's radio program?
I'm not familiar with his program. I know his name just off of hearing it before, but I'm not familiar with his work.
I'm trying to, and maybe someone can help us out there. We try to be very respectful here on the Todd Starnes Radio Show. We pride ourselves in being one of the few woke conservative radio talk shows in America. So we always want to make sure we're correctly identifying people. And I don't know if Charlemagne, and we understand Charlemagne is Charlemagne is a dude. Is that correct? We do not know his official pronouns, but based upon my observations of his photograph on Breitbart.com, I'm willing to say that Charlemagne identifies as a he. So my issue here is, what are we? Is he Mr.? Is he Mr. The God, or is he Mr. God?
According to Wikipedia, he's Mr. McKelvey. That's his last name.
What's his first? That's, oh, so this is a fake name.
Leonard Larry McKelvey, professionally known as Charlemagne the God.
Wait. Are you telling me that Charlemagne the God's name is Leonard?
Actually, it might be Leonard because there's no O Leonard? In it. It's L-E-N-A-R-D.
No way. No, really, it's Leonard? Leonard. So Leonard the God was being interviewed by CNN the other day. A program called Out Front. No, it's not an LGBT show. That's just, I think it's just Out Front, as in they're not outing anybody. They're just out in the front. So they're interviewing Leonard the God, and they're asking why black voters in the South would support former Vice President Joe Biden and Mike Bloomberg. Okay, so that's the conversation. And there's... So this is... This is what Leonard had to say. He says he called Biden and Bloomberg the two old white men. And he said they have the most racist legislation towards black people. And Leonard the God said old black people in South Carolina do love Joe Biden. But I would have to ask black voters the question, why do the old white men who have the most racist legislation towards black people, why are they the top two front runners when it comes to black support? And I suppose that's a, you know, that's a fair question, I suppose. Leonard the God goes on to say that Biden and Bloomberg came up with a black agenda the same way they sat around and systematically created things to oppress and marginalize black people. How exactly did they do that? Could someone I'm not quite sure how Mike Bloomberg systematically oppressed people. I just don't get that. So this thing is, I don't know. Leonard the God's comments are against Bloomberg are a little short on details. No, I'm not making fun of Bloomberg's height here, Caleb. I'm just saying he was short on details. Just a smidge. Just a little bit. That's all. By the way, President Trump, he is on the warpath today. Have you been on the president's Twitter feed? He is fired up today. And I'm not quite sure, to be honest, I'm just not quite sure why. But the president is real upset right now with Mike Bloomberg. I've got to pull up the tweet here. This is pretty funny. A president talking about the size. Yes, the size of Mike Bloomberg. Oh, here we go. Mini Mike. Mini Mike is a 5'4 mass of dead energy who does not want to be on the debate stage with these professional politicians. No boxes, please. He hates crazy Bernie and will, with enough money, possibly stop him. Bernie's people will go nuts. There's a lot to unravel in this tome from the president. Mini Mike is he really 5 feet four? Is that true? He is a little fella, but I didn't think he was that little.
Mini Mike, wasn't that a movie with Channing Tatum?
You know, it was. I forgot about that.
Oh, Magic Mike, my bad.
Magic? Was it Magic Mike?
It was Magic.
Yeah, we don't want Mini Mike pulling a Magic Mike on us. Nobody needs to see that. So the president is still going on in this box that apparently Bloomberg reportedly, allegedly wanted a box to stand on for the debates. And that's hard for the cameras, Caleb. I don't know if you've ever done television, but, back when I was at Fox, we hosted a few of these debates. And you've got everybody who is, a basic height. So you set the cameras accordingly. And so it's a problem when you have someone who's either like 8 feet tall or, 5 foot four in this case, because you have to like zoom down. It's a problem. President goes on to say that Bloomberg is a loser who has money but can't debate, has zero presence. He says, you'll see. He reminds this is horrible. He reminds me of a tiny version of Jeb low energy Bush, but Jeb has more political skill and treated the black community much better than many. This is really going to be an entertaining political cycle. Good for you, Mr. President. Good for you. Oh, he's also very unhappy with John Kelly. And we'll get to that a little bit later. You know, I want to go back to the grading story. This is now Caleb. I remember back when I was in grade school, and I was not the best student, so I was always getting in trouble because of my grades. And I went to school at Hope Sullivan Elementary School. All you folks listening to us on KWAM, that's right across the state line in South Haven, Mississippi. And one year, I must have been in third grade, Mrs. Folk was my reading teacher. Her husband owned Honey Fluff Donuts, which was our popular donut store in our town. And Caleb, our town was so small that up until that point, we didn't even have a McDonald's. It was that small.
Really?
Walmart did not even exist. I think we had a TGNY. You guys remember TGNY? We had a Kmart, I think. But one day, the McDonald's opened, and it coincided with my report card coming out. And so I had conveniently forgotten to give my parents my report card. So we were at McDonald's for the grand opening. I'll never forget this. Guess who was there? Caleb.
The teacher?
Mrs. Folk, the reading teacher. And she comes over to my mom and my dad, and she said hello, and I'm sitting there, and I think I was eating, I don't know, maybe a hamburger or a cheeseburger with like the, you know, the French fries and the milkshake. And she says, "Oh, I'm so glad to see you guys. I'm so sorry about little Todd's report card." I felt like the Hamburglar had just stolen my meal. And so that was a very unpleasant experience in my career. I don't think I got to go back to McDonald's for a very long time.
It's like the only thing that could have gone wrong for you in that situation.
It was it. I thought I had a perfect plan, you know, just hide the report card until after McDonald's. You know, it was pretty, I had a great plan. It was well thought out. But sadly, it was if you're grading my report card hiding story, it was probably a D minus in the great scheme of things. That's all I'm trying to say. So anyway, So a lot of you folks have been weighing in on our social media pages on this report card story. John writes in and says, "Hey Todd, C, the letter grade C means close."
C's get degrees. Don't forget that.
Well, this is true. John also says this is why they also got rid of valedictorian and salutatorian. I forgot about that, but this is true. Isn't it a lot of the schools now, instead of just having like the smartest person in the class, you've got like 30 people and everybody got like a, you don't get like a 4.0 anymore. You have like a 4.8 or a 4.9. All that to say, kids, you know, if you're going to hide your report card, you got to make sure, just have your mom and dad go through drive-thru. You don't want to run into your school teachers at McDonald's. 844-747-8868. Toll-free number, ladies and gentlemen. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
Many white people in here, and this is a space for people of color. So just be really cognizant of the space that you're taking up, because it does make some of us POCs uncomfortable when we see too many white people in here. It's only been open for 4 days, and frankly, there's the whole university for a lot of y'all to be at, and there's very few spaces for us. So keep that in mind. Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's what racism sounds like at the University of Virginia. And it's just unbelievable. I'm surprised the young lady just didn't suggest that white people should use a separate drinking fountains and bathrooms. Well, on the Newsmaker line, the group that exposed all of this nonsense, our good friend Spencer Brown from Young America's Foundation. Spencer, good to have you back on the show.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Look, I know you guys get a lot of stuff over at headquarters, but this video, it really is, it left me speechless, to be honest with you.
Well, I think that's been the reaction of a lot of people, you know, when we put it up, like you said, we put up a lot of stuff like this where we show what the reality is on the ground for students today. But this just absolutely took off, and it's got, you know, more than 2 million views on our Twitter now and other places. And I think it really goes to just show how bad the situation has gotten on college campuses, even at schools like the University of Virginia, you know, that I think a lot of people would consider to be maybe a little bit more normal than, you know, the UC Berkeleys or the Ivy Leagues up north would be. And I think, you know, it really shows people what the damaging impact that this intersectional, you know, critical race theory type education that's being fed to our students today has on the next generation.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And we've been talking about critical race theory for quite some time on this show. And this idea that somehow you are a lesser person or you are responsible for someone else's plight in life because you happen to be a white person. That is offensive. That is racist. And unfortunately, that's being taught in many public middle schools and high schools across the country right now.
Well, and I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of outrage over the incident and the fact that it happened, but I think sort of the secondary reaction that at least I had was just one of sort of sadness, seeing that there's the student there at the school who feels so strongly that white people shouldn't have a place in this multicultural student center. You know, that is the result of just years and years and years of this kind of education and this bias. And, you know, if there's one there, you know that there's more, and you know that there's a ton more across the country. And so realizing, you know, the damage that's been done to this generation and the way that they think and the way that they view their fellow Americans and their fellow humans even, I just really do feel bad for students who have this viewpoint, because what a damaging way to live your life, thinking every single day, you know, oh, that person over there looks like this, so they must be responsible for X, Y, and Z in my life, or that person over there, you know, has more than me, so I must be suffering because of it. That's just a horrible way to enter the world after college.
Spencer, can you give us the backstory here? Who filmed the video? How'd you guys get a hold of it?
Yeah, so one of our newer colleagues here at Young America's Foundation is actually a graduate of the University of Virginia not too long ago. And so he was still plugged into things going on the ground there at UVA. And so he saw it on Twitter. And we, you know, looked at it and said, this is a very serious situation. And this is something that really speaks to, you know, like we were talking about, what the impact of education today is. And so we went ahead and reposted it. And as we've seen, it just completely took off and really, I think, demonstrates the key problem with what is being taught today. And so, you know, 2 million plus views later, I think a lot of people now are having conversations about what this is. I think sort of the unsurprising but still disappointing thing is the way the University of Virginia has responded, putting out kind of a typical milquetoast statement, just talking about how committed they are to inclusion and diversity, instead of, you know, coming out very strongly to say this is not the way that we teach our students. We ought to be teaching our students, you know, to value every life as they are, which is created in the image of their creator. And instead, you know, they just sort of came out and said their same leftist baloney again, without actually addressing the problem that has been identified.
Yeah, you see, I'm not buying what the university is trying to sell here, because if this had been, let's just be honest, if you'd had a white person saying, hey, you black students, you're not allowed to use this room, you would have had Don Lemon and the entire lineup at CNN broadcasting from UBA's campus tonight.
Well, completely. I mean, that's the great way to do it, is just flip the situation and imagine what the result would have been. You know, the administration probably would have given students a day off class. They would have brought in counselors to help students deal with this troubling revelation on their campus. They would have, you know, mandated sensitivity training for students who were involved in the situation or who applauded at the end. But instead, it's just, again, sort of this selective outrage or selective standards when it comes to enforcing, you know, what the left claims to be, which is tolerant and inclusive. But looking at the rest of Virginia, you know, right now our headquarters is here in Reston, Virginia, and what we've seen recently is just a continuation of the left refusing to enforce their standards on their own that they hold conservatives to. You know, we've got Ralph Northam as governor. We've got this situation at UVA. It's hardly a surprise that the left is hardly batting an eye at this.
Spencer, last weekend had a great time with you guys at the regional YAF conference I call it the Grand Ole Opry. I'm still old school, but it's the Gaylord Resort there in Nashville. What a terrific time! You guys had a huge crowd there.
That was an amazing weekend, and you definitely brought down the house there in the closing session, really getting our students fired up to go back to all their campuses. We had a number of UVA students actually at that conference, so I'm sure they're thinking back to the inspiration they received over the weekend. But yeah, we had more than 400 college and a couple high school students there, all really fired up and excited to go back to their campuses and ensure that the sort of thing that we saw at UVA this week is not the norm, and that students realize there's an alternative way to think and an alternative way to live their lives.
Yeah, I'm curious how things are going with YAF as far as, you know, membership numbers. Are you guys seeing a growth spurt here as a result of the Trump administration and these policies that the White House is implementing?
Definitely. I think one thing we've seen very clearly is that kind of this go along to get along type of conservative activism doesn't work anymore, because we've seen from the left, you know, Trump derangement syndrome and everything that comes along with that. Conservative ideas and conservative action is just not tolerated by the left. And so if students who are conservative want to have any voice or any presence on their campus at all, they really do need to stand up and fight for their rights. And so whether that be, you know, YAF helping these students get representation in federal court to ensure that they have equal access on their public campuses, or working with the press in order to expose situations that happen at private schools, we do see, I think, a lot more students willing to stand up and fight. And I think part of that comes from seeing the example given by President Trump, who's somebody, you know, who just doesn't take anything from the left. He always flips it on its head and gives it right back to him. And I think, you know, that's a good example for students to see a fighter and see that that works and that you can win that way.
Yeah, well said. All right. Well, Spencer, we really do appreciate you bringing this to our attention. Very disturbing piece of video out of UVA. Where can folks go if they want to get more information about what you guys do at YAF?
Yeah, you can visit our website, which is just yaf.org, yaf.org, or you can follow us on Twitter and see that video we were just discussing by following us at YAF.
All right, Spencer, always good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. Good guy right there, ladies and gentlemen. Spencer Brown from Young America's Foundation. We had such a great time with college students, and we got to take pictures. I posted some photographs on our Instagram. That's Todd Stearns, FNC. Had a chance to meet the Young Americas Foundation group from the University of Memphis and UCLA. All the kids are all over the country, and it's really exciting to see these young people fired up. They're engaged. They're fighting for the culture, and they're also college kids, so they're out there having a good time and, you know, enjoying all the sights and sounds of Nashville. But it's nice to know, and it should be reassuring to all of you guys, that there is a remnant left in this country that is still fighting for freedom and fighting for liberty and fighting for capitalism. And that's why I'm a big supporter of what Young America's Foundation is doing. And I would encourage you to check out their website. If you want to get plugged in, get involved, maybe you want to support this group, they would welcome anything you could do. YAF.org. All right, look, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, I'm very excited about our next guest. So last weekend, I was at the Young America's Foundation in Nashville. But on Friday, I was at the ARC Encounter, which is up in Kentucky near Cincinnati. And we were filming a panel discussion that you will be able to see in movie theaters around the country next week. It's called The Red Sea Miracle. And the director of this incredible film, a guy by the name of Tim Mahoney, he's going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about the movie, the panel discussion, and how you and your church group or your Sunday school group can go and see this incredible new film coming out. It's a Fathom event, one night only film next week called The Red Sea Miracle. We've got to take a break. This is the Todd Stearns Show.
You're listening to Todd Stearns.
Folks, welcome to the Todd Stearns radio program, The Home Stretch, and I'm very excited about our next guest. His name is Timothy Mahoney. He is probably one of the best documentary directors and producers, filmmakers in the country. And he has a terrific new film that he's been working on for two decades, The Red Sea Miracle. It is going to be in movie theaters next week. You've been hearing the commercials on our show. We were able to film the panel discussion that you will be able to see in movie theaters on Friday at the Ark Encounter. Tim, great to have you on the show today.
Hey, Todd, it's great to be on the show. Thanks for getting me on.
Wow, that was a lot of fun last weekend, and what a beautiful setting for you guys to film this panel discussion.
It was. It's the biggest screen any of my films have ever been on. That was amazing.
And, of course, Ken Ham, Janet Mefford, Kay Arthur, among those on this incredible panel. I want you to tell our listeners what the film is about.
Well, the investigation really centers around the route of the Exodus out of Egypt. My first films dealt with the existence of the Israelites in Egypt, and the Moses controversy was, could Moses have written an eyewitness account, of which we covered in the second film. The third film now is really, which way did they go? The Bible says that they were heading on the way to Mount Sinai when all of a sudden God tells them to turn and camp by the sea. And so what we are investigating is two different worldviews, I guess, for looking at this. One of them I call Egyptian, and that places the event of this miraculous parting of the sea at actually a reedy lake near Egypt. And the other group I call Hebrew, and they place it, no, they say, no, that's not correct at all. They say the Bible is telling us clearly that this sea crossing happened at the Gulf of Aqaba, a mighty sea. And that's the tension that this film is going to be investigating.
Tim, this is it's a fascinating film, and we were we were really blown away by the response from the audience. Over 1,000 people turned out to watch this, to be a part of the filming of this. Why is it that you do this? This is not your first film. You've been looking for patterns of evidence in many other parts of the Bible. Why are you on this mission?
Well, I think that it's clear that in my own life, I've had questions about, I grew up believing the stories of the Bible and the narrative of the Bible. I mean, my mother was a single parent. She read the Bible to us, you know, before we went to bed. But, you know, as you get older, people challenge the belief in the Bible, and they challenge a lot of things. And I just got to a place where I wanted to know. And I didn't have a problem until I went out and started investigating. And then people said, hey, there's no evidence for this. And to be honest with you, that wears on a person. And I ended up having a crisis of faith in the very beginning, when I started making this film, where I had real doubt about it. But I persevered, and I ended up finding in the first film, is it sort of my testimony of what happened, it was an amazing pattern of evidence for the Exodus. So I think what's happened now is that I have seen more patterns, and I'm leading people on a journey that I'm personally taking, and I'm taking this journey through the Bible, and I'm working our way now across the desert with the Israelites, and we're going to look at what sea was parted, and then we're going to raise the question of miracles. You know, do miracles happen? Can sea part? You know, how did it happen? Did it happen just in a natural way with wind blowing? Or was it supernatural, where the walls of water were actually standing on end, like Cecil B. DeMille portrayed in the Ten Commandments?
One of the things I love about the film is your attention to detail and how it really just, I was watching in the crowd, you had a lot of young people there, and they were just really drawn into this, almost as if they were on some sort of an adventure, sort of like Indiana Jones.
Well, I really enjoyed after the showing. I had these young boys come up to me, and they were, you know, actually giving us testimonies about what they liked about it, because it caught their attention. And what you're starting to see is that this, what some people would say, well, this is just a myth. I'm going to show the plausibility, and I'm going to show through the investigation which route they could have taken. And we're going to hear from different scholars who've spent their life uncovering information to basically say, we believe this is where this event happened. And so what we're seeing is that this film is great for young people. It's great for adults. And many people are deciding to come to purchase tickets and bring their entire family, bring their Sunday school class. They're inviting their whole church to come along. And Todd, you can get tickets at patternsofevidence.com, patternsofevidence.com. You can see a trailer there, and you can learn more about this. And I'm just encouraging people, on February 18th, there's going to be our one night only showing. And Todd, you know, our films are big. We have an intermission that's so big, and then we've got the panel discussion. It's going to be a full evening, really a Bible-affirming evening.
Yeah, it really was. But I got to tell you, I was next to Kay Arthur, and she steals your popcorn. Tim, I'm just going to...
Did she?
So you got to bring your own popcorn.
Got to bring your own popcorn. That's right. Well, Todd, you do a great job. Again, you're going to be hosting. This is the second time you and I have gotten together, and you did a great job. And you're hosting the panel discussion afterward.
Yes.
And I think that those panel discussions are helpful because they help to sort of, well, what do we do with this now? Where is this going? And how do we apply it to our own life?
So patternsofevidence.com, and folks, there's a trailer there. You can watch a preview of it. You can also get your tickets one night only, February the 18th. And as Tim mentioned, it is there is an intermission, so you'll be able to get yourself some extra popcorn and whatnot. Tim, this is a terrific film. Congratulations. Our time is running short, but we're going to want to get you back on next week, even if just for a few minutes, to promote the film one more time. Congratulations, and thank you for letting us be a part of this great, great project.
Well, thanks, Todd. And as people know, this is part one of a two-part film. So part one's February 18th. Part two, then, will come May 5th. So you want to start from the very beginning and see this amazing journey to the sea.
All right. Tim Mahoney, ladies and gentlemen, the director of The Red Sea Miracle. It's going to be in movie theaters on February the 18th. That's next week, folks. So you want to go ahead and get your tickets now, and you can do that at patternsofevidence.com. Tim, thank you, and we'll chat with you next week, and congratulations on the incredible film.
Well, thanks, Don. Thanks for helping us out.
All right. Anytime. It really was a lot of fun. So we got to the panel was Dr. Jeremy Lyons from Truett-McConnell University, just a brilliant scholar. My friend and radio colleague, Janet Mefford, who's just tons of fun. Our good friend, Kay Arthur from Precepts International, one of the incredible Bible study ministries in this country. And Ken Ham, who founded the Ark Encounter Answers in Genesis. patternsofevidence.com. Watch the movie. You'll be able to see our panel as well. It was a lot of fun. All right, folks, that music means we got to scoot out of here. Get out there. Have a great day. We're going to do this all over again tomorrow. This is the Todd Starnes Show.